Yo, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. Welcome back. So, earlier, I recorded my reaction to Damian Lillard getting traded to Milwaukee Bucks, So you guys can go check that out for all of my NBA listeners or my people that's interested in that. I did do a brief breakdown of the trade and my thoughts and reaction to it. But you guys know this is a NFL episode where we're going to be talking. Well, this could be football, classified as football. So I'm going to talk about, obviously, week three reactions. We're going into week four. We got a really good Thursday night game that I'm excited about. So I'm going to talk about that as well. I have a variety of things that I want to talk about and get to. So I'm going to try to get to everything. But first and foremost, I'm your humbled and highly favored host, Isaiah Kitt of the Isaiah Kitt Podcast. I welcome and I thank and I appreciate everyone that may be listening right now. Currently, I don't care when you're listening. It can be in the morning. You can listen to this at night. I greatly, greatly appreciate everybody that is tuning in and tapped in. Thank you to everybody that's been sharing and downloading the pod. Thank you. Shouts out to all the first-time listeners. If you are a first-time listener, welcome on aboard. Thank you. If you are a regular listener, shouts out to you. But everyone under the sound of my voice, I greatly appreciate the download, the stream, the listen. I greatly appreciate all the support. Let's get into it. Let's not even waste any time. And I with the combination, and I've been thinking about this, with the combination of the college football season and what I've been watching on Sundays in terms of the NFL, looking at a lot of these teams play on Sundays, it kind of shows that points are come at a premium. But more, I can make a case that more than half of the teams in this league, more than half of the league can make a case at drafting a quarterback this upcoming year. I can make a case for more than half of the league. Now, whether or not more than half of the league do that, this is a really, really deep draft class in terms of quarterbacks. Even the not just only 2024, but 2025 seems to be pretty deep as well, right? But I can make a case. And that's just the takeaway that I get on Sundays. Watching, like, I think points and scoring and really good quarterback play, it comes at a premium, and we know this. But I was watching, I watched pretty much all of the games on Sunday. I kind of geek out. I really do. I really geek out when it comes on Sundays, where I try my best to watch all of the games. And at times, more times than not, especially that 1 o'clock slot, I usually have four or five games on at once. So I watch all of the games. And like I said, great quarterback play comes at a premium. But I was watching Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs absolutely demolish the Bears. And I saw Patrick Mahomes make a throw that was just so incredible. Off of a play action read, he threw it near the boundary. It was an absolute, just an absolute dart. But I just, and watching him play, watching some of these other guys around the league play, it just doesn't make sense to draft a guy like a Kirk Cousins type of quarterback without a Shanahan or a Mike McDaniel type when you have guys like Mahomes making plays that he makes on a daily, on a weekly basis. And that is why the whole discussion about Caleb Williams, that's why it's so often discussed. And there's a percentage of people, anytime someone is just talked about and discussed and we say he's a generational talent or he's one of the best prospects we ever saw, there is a percentage of people that kind of push back because like, whoa. But this is why the talk of Caleb Williams and either some even some other guys throughout college, this is why it's often talked about. Because you look at guys like Mahomes, and especially with Caleb Williams, we see like translatable and really similar traits. So, I mean, I watched the Vikings and Chargers game, and Herbert played really, really good. And the Chargers offensively did what they always do, right? What we are accustomed to them doing. But luckily, and both teams were trying to lose that game. But I watched the Vikings and the Chargers, and the Vikings, they're fun to watch offensively, but Kirk Cousins, I hate when people dump on Kirk Cousins. It seems like the Vikings are kind of like, this is going to be his last year as a Viking, it seems like, especially with the 0-3 start. But like, you look at a guy like Kirk, where at times the ad-libbing and him trying to extend plays, it's just not there. And it just has you wondering, like, hey, if you're not a Sean McVay, a Andy Reid, a Kyle Shanahan, Mike McDaniel type of offensive wizardry and genius that can make the games easier and simpler for a court, like, why draft a guy like a Kirk Cousins? Why? Well, and it's not, like I said, Kirk Cousins has had a really good career. And I think for a long time, you look at his number, like I think for a long time, and obviously he hasn't won the big games like people want him to, whatever. But Kirk is Kirk, right? But he's a really good quarterback. Like if you couldn't have the top 8 or 9 guys in the league, you know, if you couldn't have like the top 7 quarterbacks in the league, so I'm talking, if you couldn't have like Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Herbert, Trevor Lawrence, Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers, if you couldn't have one of those guys, like, I think most teams would be really, really fine with Dak, Kirk Cousins. Like, you'd be fine with that. You'd be good. And I think, if you put the right pieces around them, you can win 11, 12 games on a yearly basis. Like, Dak has done it, right? Mm-hmm. But the Cowboys have put a really good team around him more often than not. But when we're talking about the quarterback play throughout the league, and I'm going to get to the Broncos because that was an absolute nut job that happened. I want to talk about the Cowboys and their red zone issues. And I've seen all kind of takes from it this past week, right? I've seen all kind of takes where, you know, some people say, hey, that the Cowboys are missing Zeke. And obviously people are shitting on Dak and people saying, oh, Dak is the problem. They're paying this guy. And I started thinking about it. And it's not, I think, more of the focus should be on this particular person. And it's Mike McCarthy. But I started thinking, if you remember, Aaron Rodgers with Mike McCarthy, before Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and these guys, and because those guys are really, really good. But Rodgers was so good at ad-libbing and extending plays. And at his athletic peak, it was something different. Like, in terms of his – it was just something different and amazing to watch. And even when plays weren't there to be made, Rodgers, in his athletic peak, was able to make these type of plays. This off script, back of the corner, back shoulder, crazy type throws, right? Great touch, display great touch, you know, display great anticipation. Like, all of this, like, all of the peak skills that we all have come to love from Aaron Rodgers. And it's just kind of trickled down to Mahomes and the other younger guys, right? But Rodgers was amazing to do that. And I think sometimes we look at a player's salary and we're like, man, a player's getting the max. And it's like, not every player that gets the max is like actually the like a max type of player. So when people are like pointing out, hey, Dak, this, Dak, that, I think we should all come to grips, and I'm a big Dak supporter, but even with me supporting Dak and being a fan of Dak, we should all just come to grips that Dak is not Patrick Mahomes. Dak is not Josh Allen. I do think certain guys like a Josh Allen should be criticized more, right? But they should be criticized more than Dak, right? If we're saying they're better, if we're saying that they're better than Dak, they should be criticized more or more harshly, I should say. But Dak is not like peak Aaron Rodgers, nowhere near that. So when we talk about Mike McCarthy and we would talk about the Cowboys' red zone struggles, I think we the expectation or our focus should be on Mike McCarthy and his creative play calling or lack thereof. I truly do. I mean, because with Dak, he has limitations. I don't think we can, and that's what I'm saying. Dak is who he is, right? I think from, like, obviously you can spot out things that Dak has gotten better throughout his career, but he is what he is. He's going to make a living, and he's made a living at being the 8th, 9th, 10th best quarterback in the league. And the Cowboys are fine with that. Obviously they are, because they paid him, right? But we can't expect him to make something out of nothing. I mean, his arm is solid. His mobility is solid. But he is a guy that is dependent on the play caller and the play caller's performance. So when you know, I look at Tua, and you know, Miami is so electrifying. And I think most of us can agree that, like, in terms of creative play calling and just being able to scheme guys open and what they're doing schematically in Miami, it's a hell of a job by Mike McDaniel. And I think most of us are coming around to the fact that, like, hey, okay, this guy, Mike McDaniel, is an excellent play caller, an excellent play designer, and Tua has a special play caller right next to him. But we can all agree that, like, most of us thought Tua had limitations, right? And, like, he does. Like, doesn't have the biggest arm, not like overly athletic, okay athlete, right? But right now, Tua and the Dolphins and his offense is lighting the world on fire. And a lot of it, it helps when you got Tyreek Hill, right, and Jaylen Waddle, and you got, like, it helps when you got, like, the fastest trio of receivers, right, in the league. But also, Mike McDaniel and the play calling and the scheming of things, it's easier for Tua. It makes it easier for Tua. It makes it so much easier. So, you know, this is what I say about Dak. Like, Dak has limitations. And he is what the Dak is what the, you know, like I said, he's made a living off of being, you know, record universally known as, like, either the 8th, 9th, or 10th best quarterback in the league. That's what he is. But that now means, like, hey, Mike McCarthy, he gotta like utilize Tony Pollard. He gotta utilize CeeDee Lamb can run just about any route in the book. You gotta utilize Brandon Cook's speed in order to be better and more efficient in the red zone. I think also, I think people are forgetting the fact that they were missing two Hall of Fame linemen and a whole starter. So they're missing three offensive linemen. Two of those guys are Hall of Famers and the other one's a pretty good starter. So we can't forget about that as well. So, and you know, so everybody's just so critical of Dak. But this is where the coaching staff come into play, where you gotta be able to get him easier looks. Gotta get him easier looks. And I always say this, you gotta look at who you beat. Who are you going to beat? Who do you have to beat in order to advance further and deeper into the playoffs? Well, in the NFC, the three top dogs is Philly, 49ers, Dallas. With San Francisco and Philly, San Francisco, they got Kyle Shanahan, one of, if not the best play caller in football, great play designer. In Philly, you got They got loads of talent. Hell, me and you can, whoever, like, I can draw up something for Philly, and they, like, we could, we'll be pretty efficient in the red zone. So Mike McCarthy now has to take the step and make the play calling a little bit creative for Dak. Let's see. Also, don't forget, we, if you are a new listener, we do, I do my top 10 teams list at all, you know, every week. So I'm going to hit on my top 10 teams list. I wanted to talk about the Raiders and the Broncos. Raiders and Broncos. Let me start with the Raiders. So, you know, there's a lot going on with the Raiders. And they're 1-2. They beat the Broncos week one, and that win doesn't look so, like, doesn't look as good as, you know, some people may have thought it did in week one. So the last 2 weeks, the Raiders have lost to the Bills and the Steelers. And I don't want to say Josh McDaniels is running out of time here, but I don't want to say that, right? Because I think they're going to give him – they're going to spare him this year. But, man, I think something has to give. And he's kind of riding it out with Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, this is – and I think the importance – coordinators matter. Coordinators, coaching matters in this league. I can't stress it anymore. Mike McDaniel, as great as an offensive play caller as he is, and as explosive as this offense looks for Miami, the reason why I'm sold on Miami a little bit more, it's because of the defensive mind that they have on the other side, in Vic Fangio. Vic Fangio is one of the premier defensive coordinators that we have in this league. So, hiring, like, coaching matters, coordinators matters, the guys who you have operating your defense, it matters. It matters. And with Josh McDaniels, and this kind of goes for all of the Patriot guys that get head coaching jobs, I don't know what it is, but all the Patriots got, they hire each other, and they stay so, like, isolated. And I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of these guys, a lot of these Patriot guys really don't work outside of Belichick, right? Like, I think that's the reason why a lot of these guys don't work. I don't know what to really think. I mean, I look at the Raiders. Garoppolo, obviously, he has limitations. But with an offense that has Davante Adams and Josh Jacobs and that offensive line, they shouldn't have 7 points in 55 minutes. And that's essentially what happened to this Raiders team. Now, you know, on the flip side, the Steelers kind of have their ingredients to how they're going to be productive and how they're going to be good this year. But the Raiders, I don't know what it is. I'm not huge on McDaniel. Never been huge on McDaniel. You know, he kind of did the same thing in Denver where he kind of rolled with Tim Tebow until the wheels fell off. That wasn't going to work. And with Garoppolo, you know, I guess he's going all in with Garoppolo, but Davante Adams is speaking out, you know, saying, hey, the culture isn't great. And we can get into culture around the league, around with a lot of these teams. But it just seems like when one bad step happened, there is a trickle-down effect and a domino effect that happens with some of the poorly ran operations around the league. Like, from the Raiders to the Broncos to the Bears to the Jets. Like, if one thing goes left, it is like the operation just fumbles and collapses. And like I said, with all of those teams, and quite frankly, it's kind of funny, most of those teams are winless. Bears, Broncos, like, I think they play each other. That's going to be a shit show. But, like, they play each other. Like, they're winless. And the operations are just bad. And, you know, so with the Raiders, I wouldn't be surprised if Davante Adams walked away or got, or not gonna say walked away, but if he got moved and traded, because they need, they're kind of cash strapped offensively. They don't have much talent on the defensive side of the ball outside of Max Crosby, who is a premier pass rusher, right? They just don't have much. So when I'm thinking, I don't really know what to think about the Raiders. I think they need overhaul. When I'm looking at the Broncos, the Russ experiment is just not working. And I kind of talked about this last week. You know, I don't want to keep, you know, beating a dead horse. But the Russ and Sean Payton thing is not working. And the Broncos lost 70-20. And I don't quite know how you justify that in today's NFL. I just don't know. I don't know how you justify that. 70-20? That's 10 touchdowns. I don't know. I just don't know. I can't wrap my mind around how you justify losing a game 70-20. And obviously, those guys quit. Like, you, in order to lose 70-20, you had to quit. Right? But I don't know when you, I don't know when Sean Payton kind of waves the white flag on the Russell Wilson thing. But this whole organization needs a redo. It needs a redo. But what do you do? I mean, the amount of dead cap money for several years that they'd be stuck with him, I'll say this. Look like the Broncos, they're going to have a high pick. I don't know. But maybe you get a really high pick and you cut him, because no one is going to trade for Russell Wilson in that contract, right? It's like, it's atrocious. No one's going to do that. You cut him. And you just swallow all the dead cap money for a year, and you just roll with your young quarterback. But you can't unload this contract. Like, you know, like a couple years ago, the Eagles were able to unload the contract of Carson Wentz, and they moved him to Indianapolis, and they got a pick back. Like, they did pretty good. Now you think about it, they kind of did pretty good with that Carson Wentz deal, but. It's certain contracts like this one, and like you can't unload this contract, right? But it's just not the quarterback. Like, look at the GM. Hey, look at Vance Joseph, the defensive coordinator. His track record isn't looking too pretty now. I mean, funny thing was he was the coach of the Broncos, got fired, but I think he's a Colorado guy. So I don't know, but. Like, it's not just a Russ problem in Denver no more. Like, I think we, like, obviously, if the Broncos were 2-1 and Russell Wilson was playing like this, it'd be easier to gloss over. We'd still be like, oh, Russ isn't Russ, but hell, they're winning. But they're not winning, and they're losing in, like, an embarrassing fashion. So, I don't know. But it kind of shows you, I kind of tell you guys this all the time, but you kind of see everything you need to know about these operations and how it's being ran. And with the Jets, like, for instance, the Jets, you know, Aaron Rodgers goes down. And it's, yes, the injury is horrific and it is unfortunate. But the way how the Jets are just unraveling, and, you know, there's a report that came out, this week, you know, several defensive Jet players are mad because Salah is sticking with Zach Wilson. And it's like, hey, just say you missed. But I want to talk about that too with the Jets. But like, my overall point is, it's a domino effect with these bad teams versus when, you know, look at the Chiefs. Week 1, you know, they feared that Travis Kelce had a season-ending injury. They thought he tore his ACL. Chris Jones wasn't under contract and was in the stands watching the game. Like, it didn't look too good for the Chiefs week one, and they lost, right? They lost on ring night. But it kind of shows you the fabric, what kind of operation, how they're operating their franchise in Kansas City, and it's just totally – it's night and day from that to what you see with the Bears and the Jets and what the hell is going on with the Broncos and all. Like, it's bad. Kind of shows you how bad it can get. And if you notice, a lot of those teams that I mentioned, like Jets, Bears, you got to look at their 2021, you know, quarterback draft failures, right? With Zach Wilson, it was never apparent to me that the whole Zach Wilson thing with, okay, it went horrendously bad with him starting, right? Then, okay, you move off, you bench him or whatever. You seek into getting Aaron Rodgers. You finally get Aaron Rodgers. And then he was supposed to just, like, and then Zach Wilson was supposed to just, like, magically get better. Like, no, that was not going to happen. I think if the Jets were thinking that, because I think their whole thing was like, hey, we get Aaron. He sits behind Aaron. He gets better. Like, that doesn't work. He wasn't going to drastically get better. Maybe he got better, like, in increments, but he was never going to get drastically better. I think if that was the thought process, I thought that was really moronic if they did that, or if they thought that. And with a guy like Robert Saleh, I like Robert Saleh. Now, one thing I can give him over Brandon Staley is that this Jets defense is pretty good, unlike Brandon Staley and his defense. But when I see the constant commotion, whether that's on the sidelines during game day, and we've all seen teams go through that, right? But then there's some defensive players that's like, not really backing Robert Saleh, supporting Zach Wilson. You know, it's weird. It's weird. And it, like I said, it separates the poorly ran operations from the really good high-end operations. And, coming out of the draft, I think Zach Wilson, there was some character, personality issues, right? He wasn't a team captain. And my perspective was, hey, I didn't overlook that, but kind of like ego cocky kind of dude. But I didn't overlook that. I didn't think too much of it, but I didn't overlook it either. It was weird that he wasn't a team captain. Usually the quarterbacks are the team captains or they're named team captains and they feel like one of the guys. Zach Wilson never gave me that feel that he wants to belong and be one of the guys, right? But that's just that. And I looking at that 2021 class, and I'm talking about a lot of these quarterbacks for the upcoming draft class of 2024 and in 2025, I would say the one distinct difference that I can just point out easily, the guys that got drafted in 2021, they just didn't have enough tape. Like, there wasn't a lot of tape, with the exception of, and granted, okay, Justin Fields had tape, but with the exception of Fields and Trevor Lawrence, where, like, we've been following Lawrence. We follow Lawrence from his first game at Clemson all the way to his last game, then up until he got drafted at number one. Like, there was a lot of tape. There were storylines around it. With Zach Wilson, he kind of just popped out of nowhere, right? Like, he had the really good junior year in the COVID year, which was kind of weird. And I think 2020 kind of threw off everything in terms of that whole process, because we look back now, you know, a couple years later, clearly Zach Wilson and Trey Lance were taken high, like they were taken higher than what they should have been, right? They were taken earlier than what they should have been. And with Trey Lance, there wasn't really a character issue, but there was more like, okay, he has some accuracy issues, but in North Dakota State, you couldn't really tell that because the talent disparity just wasn't that, like, those guys that they were not NFL guys. those are not NFL guys that he were playing, that he was playing. With Justin Fields, I quite don't know what it is. People try to say, oh, it's the Ohio State thing. And it's like, yes. Like, yes, Ohio State, they haven't had a quarterback that has gone on to have a long, lustrous career, 15, 16-year career. And hell, who knows? I mean, who else? C.J. Stroud may be that guy that breaks that mold, right? I know a lot of Buckeye fans try to claim Joe Burrow. I mean, he did go to Ohio State, but he finished all his last 2 years at LSU. So I don't think you can claim that. But I think with like the whole, I think there's more credence when guys like Mahomes, guys like Josh Allen, guys like Aaron Rodgers, when they have played at these smaller schools like Cal, Wyoming, Texas Tech. When you're Mahomes and you're at Texas Tech and you're playing against OU and Texas and Oklahoma State, like you are at a clear disadvantage, clear talent disparity, clear as day. Same thing with Aaron Rodgers at Cal. Like he played against the Goliath of USC, clear talent disparity, clear talent disparity. But with Fields at Ohio State, if you're an Ohio State starter for about 2 or 3 years and you play and you start 28 to 36 games, I mean, for three of those games, there's not an overwhelming talent disparity, right? Like, Ohio State, they're recruiting at a different level. So with the exception of, like, maybe the Michigan game and then whoever you play in the playoff, like, the talent is either wide or it's like equal. Like there's never a time where Ohio State, you feel like, man, they're at a huge talent disparity. No, that didn't happen. But I think the trend is a lot of these, we didn't have a lot of tape on Mac Jones. I thought he had a low ceiling anyway, but we didn't have a lot of tape on Mac Jones. We didn't have a lot of tape on Zach Wilson. You had to go YouTube Trey Lance college tape. Like, there was not a tape on them. And with the 2024 kids, 2025 quarterbacks, we're going to have so much tape on Caleb Williams. We're going to have so much tape on Michael Penix. He was at Indiana. Now he's at Washington. Drake May, Shador Sanders. We're going to, like, there is storylines in seasons upon seasons built on these guys. We actually have tape. We had really small sample sizes with the 2021 class, and some of these guys had like they struck lightning in a bottle, and it just kind of went from there. So let's move on. Two more things. This Thursday night matchup, really interesting, really entertaining, and then I'm going to get to my top 10 list. I will say, Thursday night football, just the history of it, it's very hit or miss. Like, It can go really, really well, and then you can catch a really good game on, or it can just be bad, right? It can just be both teams just forget how to play football. But the Lions and Packers feel like a really good matchup. Crazy to say, but this is like the best in the NFC North, given the fact that the Packers lost Aaron Rodgers, given the fact that, you know, the Lions historically have been pretty shitty. I mean, This is the upper echelon of the NFC North. And I kind of like it. I kind of like it. Now, I picked both of these teams. I picked the Lions to win the division. I picked the Packers to finish second. And I think I feel pretty good about that. The Lions should win this division. Now, when you watch them, you can't help but see the talent that they have on offense and defense. Now, they're not a great defense, right? They're still got some ways, they got ways to go, but they're pretty good defense. They got some nice talent. Aiden Hutchinson won NFC Defensive Player of the Week. Like, you can see the talent on defense, and then on offense, I mean, you can not only see the talent, but then also the creative play calling that they're getting with Ben Johnson. So And I know some people, I've kind of grown to like him as well, but I know some people like was a little low on Dan Campbell, wasn't high on him, and he's kind of like this tough macho guy, macho man, and I'm not saying he's going to be the next Bill Parcells, but I think dude's turned out to be a pretty good coach. I think he you know, he has his team playing pretty confident, and he's pretty confident in this Lions team. So I like the Lions. Now, with the Packers, the Packers are one of those blue blood brands in the NFL. So there's always a lot of eyes watching them. But with this Thursday night game, I think this is the first time that a lot of people are gonna see Zach Wilson. This is the first time a lot of people are gonna see Jordan Love. And I've watched a few of his games. I watched the Bears game. I watched the entire Bears game and most of the Falcons game. Didn't catch a lot of the Saints game, but I heard he was really good situationally. And you can only learn so much in situational practice moments, right? You just got to have a certain awareness and instincts that just take over in game. And, you know, this game in particular, if the Packers are able to win it, it's pretty big because they got a couple injuries. Like, I think Jaire Alexander, he's hurt. Bakhtiari, he's hurt. So they got some key dudes missing. I'm not sure if Aaron Jones is playing either. So if they're able to get this win, that's huge for the Packers and their confidence. And I think Jordan Love overall, through and through, he's looked pretty good. I know a lot of people going crazy because of the win over the Saints. He came back and, you know, had late fourth quarter push. But it looked pretty good. Now, he's had some, I think the thing is, can he be consistent, right? Because he's had a bad half. He's had a bad quarter. So can he be consistent through and through? Once we see that, you know, you want to see some consistency from Love. But he has a certain fluidity to his game that I like. And, I mean, hell, if the Packers end up, if he turns out to be one of, you know, a solid guy that he gives you a chance to win a division, not a top 10 guy, but a, you know, top 14, 15, that's a win for the Packers. That's a win. So I think they get Christian Watson back tonight. That'd be huge. But I'm going to go with the Lions to win this game tonight. I don't know. It should be a pretty good back and forth game. I wouldn't be surprised if the Packers pulled it out, but I go with the Lions. So my top 10 teams list, we do this on a weekly basis. I don't want to hold you guys any much longer, but we do this on a weekly basis. So this is my top 10 teams list. Like I said, now I'm starting to sense some type of separation within this list. I think several of these teams are really good, but they got like two or three, maybe a couple massive holes or question marks. And I think there is a group of these teams also on this list that's really, really elite that might need to pull a trade off in the middle of the season to get over the top. So at 10, let's start. I was just talking about them, the Detroit Lions. I think they're really good. I think they're really talented. Their talent pops off the TV screen. They're one pick six away from being 3-0. So I don't want to make it seem like, I don't want people to forget that, like, this Lions team is pretty good. Their defense is ranked 11th, so they're near the top 10. So, like I said, not a great defense, but it is much better than what it was from last year. And they're a really good football team. So I got them at 10. At 9, I have the Seahawks, who beat the Lions. They're averaging 29 points per game. They only have one turnover. The downside to the Seahawks is they don't have no pass rush. For years, the Seahawks have struggled to generate some type of pass rush. So you can throw the ball on them. You'll have enough time to drop back and pick apart their defense. But they had another good draft this year. Offensively, they look pretty good. They just had a bad week one outing versus the Rams, but this Seahawks team is for real. Seahawks at 9. At 8, I have the Browns. Their defense is insane. They have only allowed 490 yards. Now, I kind of talked about Deshaun Watson, and he isn't the same. He isn't the same from Houston back in 2020. And I don't think he's ever going to reach that form or that. I don't think he's going to be that caliber of player again. But, you know, if he can keep them afloat offensively, and it will, he especially needs to, because no Nick Chubb, the Browns are going to find themselves in a lot of ball games and maybe a teetering borderline playoff team. So, Browns at 8. At 7, I got the Steelers. They have a formula to how they're going to win this year. Now, I think their ceiling is pretty limited, and I was expecting their ceiling to be a little bit higher, but their offense is really, really anemic. Really anemic offensively. So I'm just not sold. But their defense is just staggering. And it puts a lot of pressure on not just the quarterback, but just on the opposing offense in general. They generate a lot of turnovers, they score points. Defense is really electrifying. Steelers at 7. At 6, the Bills are really good again. They lead the league in 9 takeaways. Only team in the league that's a top 3 scoring offense and defense. So they're getting back to their aggressive pass rushing ways. They just killed the Commanders this past weekend, but the Bills are pretty good. I think they got a big one to this week. They got the Dolphins up, so that should be a pretty good game. But I got the Bills at 6. At 5, I have the Cowboys. I'm a little concerned with their red zone issues, not with the loss, because Arizona has played pretty well throughout the year. Through the first 3 games, they played pretty well. But I'm concerned with the turnovers. I mean, I'm concerned with the red zone efficiency or lack thereof. So Cowboys at 5, they lost Trayvon Diggs. That's going to be huge because he's an impactful player. He causes a lot of turnovers and a lot of ruckus in the secondary. So they're going to miss him dearly. But I got them at 5. At 4, I got the Eagles. Their offense still looks a little funky, but they just have so much talent and depth at pretty much every level. You can't really sense it. You can't really see it. It's hard to really decipher. And they're going to just power through, because week in, week out, they're going to be more talented than just about anybody that they play, with the exception of a couple teams where it might be a little equal. But Eagles at 4. At 3, I have the Chiefs. They're getting better and better as we watch them offensively. I think their defense is pretty elite. Like I said it at the beginning of the year, this defense might be the best defense Mahomes has had since he has taken over the starting job in Kansas City. I'm gonna stand by that. That's pretty scary to think about if they ever get their offense ready. I think between the Cowboys and the Chiefs, they both need to probably make a move for another offensive weapon. The Chiefs really feel Mahomes and Kelce or die. Like that, you know, and that's not a bad thing to hang your hat on, but you know, right? That's not a bad duo to hang your hat on, but it kind of feels Mahomes, Kelce, or bust. So they gotta strengthen up the receiving group a little bit, but I like the Chiefs and the steps that they're taking. At 2, I got the 49ers. Brock Purdy doesn't make mistakes. And he may not be a superstar. He may not be special, but he does not make mistakes. Hasn't had a turnover in the last 7 games. They're the only team this year to score 30 points in each of their first 3 games. They have impactful players everywhere. I can't say any more about the 49ers. They're 15-1. In their last 16 games, by the way. 15-1 in their last 16 games, the 49ers. So they're really, really dominant. They're a buzzsaw. And then at 1, I got the Dolphins. I had to put them 1 this week. You can't beat a team 70-20. I gotta put you 1. Especially when you've been 2 or I gotta put you 1. This Dolphins team is clicking. I can't wait to see what they can do, or I want to see their ceiling defensively, right? Like if they were able to get Jalen Ramsey back late November, December, I can't wait to see what they can be defensively, especially under Vic Fangio. So that is my top 10 list. Those are my top 10 teams going into week 4. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I gave you guys 2 episodes in essentially a day. So enjoy those. For like I said, if you want to check out what I, my thoughts and opinion about the Dame Leonard trade, you can go check that out. But without further ado, hope you guys enjoy it. Always remember, 2 choices, 1 decision. Peace, deuces. I'm gone. Out.